Hi, this is Tim Green, President and CEO of John Green Realtor. Thank you for tuning in to the Live and Love Local podcast. The goal of this podcast is to connect with local leaders, entrepreneurs, and business owners in Chicago's western suburbs and to provide them with a platform to share their stories. And we thought, who better to interview than my father, John Green of John Green Realtor. In this episode, we dive into his humble upbringing and how that impacted his journey to not only join the real estate industry, but open up his own brokerage. He also shares some of the struggles he faced throughout his journey and how these challenges ultimately led him and John Green Realtor to where they are today. I have always been inspired by his journey, and I hope you are too. So let's get into it. Here's John Green. Welcome, everyone, to the Live and Love Local podcast by John Green Realtor. This is Tim Green. I'm ecstatic to have my father, John Green, here with me today. Looking forward to talking with him a lot about his life early on, growing up, all the things that shaped him to be an entrepreneur. We've got some great topics to talk to you about. Really excited to have him here. So just to kind of kick it off.
Thanks, Tim. Welcome.
Thanks. Live and Love Local podcast, baby. Yeah. I'd love to just kind of start off. I think it's always interesting. You know, a lot of people might meet you today and see what you were able to build. But so much of it was shaped by your upbringing. And so if we can kind of take a little walk back in history and talk about the early days, John Green growing up as a kid, just to give us a little bit of a feeling for what life was like and how that molded you.
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks, Tim. Well, only 74 years ago, grew up in the west side of Chicago, the Fillmore District, it's called today. Lived in apartments with a lot of children. The neighbors were firemen and policemen and technicians and such. My dad was a technician, so that early childhood was fun, was busy, was a city life. My father worked at the Metropolitan Sanitary District as a technician, and then he also worked two or three nights a week at a local tavern, and often worked on the weekends with a catering company that did a lot of the Catholic organizations. So I would often help him on the catering, and you can imagine the job I got. But those were the early days, you know. We weren't broke, but we often didn't have much cash the last couple of days of a payroll series. So we learned what it meant to be rather poor. The good news was we had a terrific education. It was a Catholic education, two blocks away from the apartment for elementary school and four blocks away from the all-boys high school. And I think a lot of the opportunities that have come my way go back to some of those good education moments and what have you. But I think the idea, because we are an entrepreneurial family, and it all started, I mean, knowing that sometimes we didn't have any money for the last couple of days, so we're going to do leftovers or do very little, it made me want to have money in my pocket. So when I was five or six, I started delivering newspapers to the neighborhood. It was a Wednesday paper, and then once a month I had to go collect. You know, now that's an experience, trying to collect $2 or something from someone. You know, they won't answer the door. Anyway, that was a beginning of one of many, many, many jobs as life went on. And when I was 10 or 11, I worked at the little corner grocery store as a stock boy, and eventually I could handle the cash register and make sandwiches for people. When I was doing that, my friends were out goofing around, but I wanted to have some cash in my pocket. When I went to high school, it was a unique experience, and the St. Mel High School was experimenting on something, and so they took the top 30 test scores of the applicants, and they called us something or other, an honors class or something like that, and we went to school an hour before everyone else. And the idea was that after our junior year, we would go into our freshman year of college. And so we would skip, or we'd take 4 years of high school and go into the second year of college. I'm not sure. But that was all good. And one of the first classes we had was typing. And as it turned out in my life, that was a very important class. So when I was a senior, I worked part-time at a finance company. This is on Madison and Pulaski. So if you picture a little storefront, you know, walk in and the door said, we will consolidate your payments. We will help you. And we are licensed and insured by the state of Illinois. And it was an awakening because families would come in that had quite a bit of debt and were being hounded by creditors. And they really didn't know what to do, and they were seeking advice and seeking counsel. And this organization would tell them, give us all your information, and then we will consolidate these payments, and we will organize your payments so it fits into your budget. And people thought, well, this sounds great. So they would sign up. And so instead of paying some store that they bought a TV from, which they should pay them $20 a month after the consolidation, maybe we would send a letter saying, we're going to pay you $6 a month for this many months. And the reality, what happened was the creditors ignored the guidance from the loan consolidation company and probably more or less threatened the family that they're just going to come and take the TV. So after that happened, the poor family, and they come in and say, look, we can't go with this. We have to go do it our own way, and so we need to get out of our agreement. And of course, the agreement would let them out, but for an enormous fee, like $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000, and we could garnish their wages. And it was just an awakening that there would be companies that would abuse families financially and just take advantage of them. And that really affected me. I quit once I realized all that. So anyway, then I finished high school. I didn't stay with the program in the last year because I had a girlfriend, and I'll just leave it at that. But the education was great, and I tried to get into a couple universities with scholarships, but missed two scholarships. I was the number two guy. So I ended up going to a junior college in Cicero, Illinois. And it worked out very well because I could transfer 52 out of 56 credit hours to DePaul to finish. And as a freshman in junior college, I had an enormous opportunity to work at Hennis Freight Lines, 3200 South St. Louis in Chicago, as an office person. I was a teamster. I was a union card-carrying teamster, and I made really good money. So this opened up a whole new world for me. I would work 30, 35 hours a week. I moved into a very, very small apartment in—
While going to school.
I'm going to school, yeah. I'm taking 17 hours at DePaul. And I moved into this little tiny basement apartment in a two flat in Berwyn on Euclid.
You always speak very fondly. You were pretty excited to move into it.
It's pretty exciting. And I was the first guy that had an apartment. So, you know.
All your buddies.
All right. Yeah, we did all the studying at my apartment.
Right, right, right.
But it worked out well. And DePaul was great because you could squeeze your classes within 10 minutes of each other. And you could have a full semester and be finished by 1 o'clock in the afternoon and go 3 days a week or something.
Got it.
It always marveled when people would go away to universities, and I would see them, you know, at a break, and I say, how many hours you take? And say, I'm taking 15 hours. And I go, okay, good. Then what do you do? Well, you know, that's all. I said, well, but what do? You know, oh, we shoot pool or play cards. And it always amazed me because I never felt that I was denied anything, you know, even though I was working those hours. I had fun and I had dates and, you know, that's keeping my grades up. So
one thing I was going to ask you about, because as a kid, you always told us about this. We talked a little bit about growing up, but could you tell us a little bit about where you lived, what the conditions were like? Because I think that's a pretty fascinating story.
Yeah, what's fascinating is the apartment building has been knocked down many, many years after we left, but it was a three-story walk-up. I guess we'd call it about a 12-unit building. We were on the second floor, and so there were four kids, and it's a one-bedroom apartment. My sister slept on a cot in the dining room, and my brother and I, my brother was a year older, we slept on, I guess what you'd say, a porch. And it wasn't heated. It might have been a screen porch, and then we would visqueen over the screen.
What's visqueen? Plastic?
Plastic, okay. Yeah, right. To seal the wind. And we slept there, you know, and it could be 30 degrees below zero. And all I can remember is having those heavy wool army blankets, and you would crawl in and you wouldn't move. So, but the good news was during the summertime, you could look right out the screen to the alley, and that's where we used to play basketball. We'd try and figure out who didn't own the real estate or who were distant owners, and then we'd put a basketball hoop on the roof of the garage until you get kicked out. But so that was how we grew up. And
all right, so then you're going to school, and you're living in the garden apartment, and you're still working at the trucking company, correct? And you were there for how many years?
4 years.
Okay, and you're making what you thought was pretty good money at the time. You were You buy a car? Do you do anything?
I bought a car. I was able to buy a Mustang convertible, 6-cylinder, manual transmission, red leather interior. I couldn't believe it, but the fellow I worked for, the terminal manager, was my boss at Hennis Freight Lines. He explained the credit union and how it would work and what I would qualify for. And my goodness, it was another good finance lesson.
Okay.
You know? And later on I learned there's better ways to do that. But it just paints the picture that even though it was this little tiny beater of an apartment, it just worked. It worked very well, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
and frankly, it was probably big considered to what you grew up with.
Yeah, and it was a private spot. You know, it had like a half of a bedroom and a bathroom, a little tiny kitchen, and sometimes I'd have a roommate, a college roommate, maybe for a month or two or three. But it was pretty small for that to work out. So then, I finished DePaul in February of 67 and interviewed a couple places. I don't think I've told you this, but I went to Illinois Bell and I interviewed with them, and that was fascinating because it was a nice building, nice people, boom, boom, boom. But I also went to interview at Morrell Meat Packing.
Okay.
And that was an old office on Wabash, and you'd hear the trains go by and just old big desk and big open space. And the guy that was interviewing me was a gentleman smoking a cigar, you know, and he liked me and he said, you know, kid, I'm going to make a meat man out of you. And that was the quote. And, you know, I took the L from Berwyn to the city to go to the interview. And all the way home, I'm thinking, how do I tell my buddies I'm a meat man? You know, and I'll never forget that. But the Illinois Bell job seemed fascinating because I would be more or less a consultant to mid and small businesses to help them be aware of whatever Illinois Bell could offer and help them in their business. So I took that job. I was making about $7,000 a year. I always like to have as much information as possible. So I would read a lot of the legislation that the phone company had, and I would learn about different things that the phone company could do with their technology, but probably didn't tell people because it wasn't profitable and what have you. And so it was in early 1969 when my boss said, here, go talk to this company.
Can you talk a little bit about, because as a kid, you would tell us about the sales training at Illinois Bell, and it was a great foundation, even though it wasn't a commission role, you were on salary, that you always mentioned there was some really good sales training that you went through there.
Excellent training. It was the kind of thing where just to learn about open-ended questions about the assumptive close, about getting background information from the customer and finding out what their competition was and what was the most difficult items and what they... But anyway, the training at Illinois Bell was good. It was crisp, clean, not dramatic, and it translated very well, actually, when I started getting into real estate. So I went out to the Grange, and there was a very successful real estate company called Rich Port Realtor, Mr. Rich Port. And at that time, they had 11 offices in the western suburbs, and they were expanding. He built a new two-story building on LaGrange Road at 47th Street. And I was there to help them a little bit with the phones. And during that meeting, I met him. And then in order to figure out what they needed, you know, I interviewed a number of the agents. So I became acquainted with 7, 8, 10 different agents and learned what they were doing and what have you. And I actually came up and discovered that we, the telephone company, could provide call forwarding at a very low expense, which was a fabulous feature for a real estate company. So when they're ready to close the office in the evening or on the weekends, you know, you could forward the calls to an agent and you'd be in contact all the time. And that was a big, big, big benefit. And then we talked about different watch lines and different ways they could pull in more customers. So the short story is, I was 24 years old, and I think Rich was probably thinking they should start hiring young people. So he asked me, he said, "Well, did you ever think of selling real estate?" And I've told you about the apartments we lived in and the apartment I had. I had no idea that people owned homes that had more than one bathroom and that there was advantages and there was appreciation and there were tax advantages and how you could use fine. I didn't know any of that. Completely, completely out of my realm. But I said, "No, sir." You know, I said,
I'm pretty happy working at Illinois Bell.
Yeah,
I got a Mustang.
I was saying a Mustang outside, and that's right. I said, you know, so I'm not. And I said, but the other thing I said, I just started my MBA at DePaul. And I remember him saying, "Oh, you started an MBA?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, why did you do that?" I said, "It's simple. You get an MBA, you're going to make more money." He goes, he said, "Is making more money important to you?" Ding! I went, "Yes, sir." And so he said, "Well, sit down." And he brought out this three-ring notebook like a child would have in elementary school. And he said, "Okay, well, you've met some of the agents. So you met Mike over there. And you know, Mike was, I don't know, in his 40s or something, and nice guy, and okay, nothing special. Remember, I'm making $7,000 a year."
Okay.
And Mr. Port, he goes, "Well, look here, let's see. Mike last year made $41,000. 41. And then he said, "And you met Bob. And you met Martha, and you met, you know, one of them was making $80,000. You know, unbelievable. I mean, my eyes just exploded. I had no idea. So I said, "Wow, that's, you know, that's really impressive. But maybe I should think about it." And he said, "Okay." He said, "Well, here's what we think." He said, you should live where you want to work. So here's a list of our offices. Why don't you drive around, try to get acquainted, and then we'll come back and have a meeting." So he did that. And I didn't know where Naperville was.
Okay.
I mean, right. Did not know where Naperville existed. So we spent some time, Patty and I, my wife and I. We had just been married 2 months prior, December of 68. And so we drove around and found the towns, and we found Naperville.
But it's kind of a classic story because, you know, here you are recently married. You have what you think is a very good job at Illinois Bell, very comfortable, working for a good, solid company. And just a couple months into being married, you're now, I'm just picturing this, but you're out driving around looking at towns you haven't been to so you can make a career move into a career you've never been in before because you heard people are making a lot of money. I can only imagine mom's reaction to that.
She was great.
Just kind of rolled with it.
Well, you know, she had a good job at Eastern Airlines. She was a secretary to the national sales manager, which meant we got all kinds of free trips all the time. Yep. But well, we talked about it, and we had $300 in a savings account.
Yeah. Was it the most you'd ever had?
Yeah, it's all the wedding money.
Okay, yeah. And there's a little bit of a peak.
And so, but I remember talking, we said, you know, this is a gamble, this is a risk, but we're young, we just got married, we want to have a family. You know, if we don't take a risk now, we probably never, ever, ever will. And that was kind of the motivation. That kind of pushed us. And then we got to Naperville, we drove around, and we said, whoa, this is cool. It's got a college, it's got a hospital, it's got a downtown, and it has farmland all around it.
How many people were in Naperville at the time?
20,000.
Okay.
And one traffic light.
Really?
At Ogden and Washington.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So,
And it's 1969-ish? Is that when it would have been?
1969, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I started in May of 69.
And how long were you at Richport prior? You were there from...
No, I mean, I started at Richport.
Sorry, you're going to Richport. Yeah. My bad. So that's 1969. Okay.
So I was at the phone company for about 2.5 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. So, you know, we were so impressed with Naperville. And even to the point where we went to the grocery store, it might have been Casey's. And we were in the grocery store, and Patty was pushing the cart, and like someone was cutting in front or something, and the other person was said, "Oh, I'm sorry, excuse me," but it caught Patty's attention because she said, "People are so nice here," you know, and in Berwyn they might say, "Hey, get out of here." So, but that was an impression. So the impression to us of Naperville was we were very fortunate. Really fortunate.
So you spent a weekend driving around looking at it,
right?
Thing?
And I went back and I said, okay, so we decided
I'm going to move to Naperville and start a new career.
Yeah, and you know, my parents were against it, more or less, just because Illinois Bell is a good company, and you know, la da 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 da. They changed their mind later on, but so you know, we said we decided, and at the same time, so Naperville had a downtown office right in Washington and Jefferson, but they were building a new office on Ogden Avenue.
Okay.
You know, that was the thinking to have it, and so I met those people, those agents, and the sales manager, and the really nice people, smart, hardworking, good. All of them were older, which was kind of the nature of the business.
Yeah,
probably everywhere. You know, they were most full-time, but maybe more part-time and just kind of in it for a little bit. So as it turned out, we started May 1st, 1969, and I made the commitment to work every day. Because if you need so much time to achieve such, you know, a certain level of knowledge and customers, I want to get there as quick as I can.
Yep.
So we decided we'd work every single day except Christmas and New Year's and Easter.
I was listening to the news yesterday on something on CNBC, and somebody was saying, if you work 80 hours a week, you'll get twice as much experience as those that are working 40. Pretty basic comment.
Yeah.
But you've always acted that way. If you're going to get into something, you're going to go really fast and hard at it.
And so when I started, I mean, it was fascinating, and looking at homes and valuations and, you know, learning about real estate contracts. I took some business law classes at DePaul, and so that helped me. But as it turned out, on Memorial Day, the office was closed, but I was there. And a couple pulled in. I'm sorry, I get emotional because
customers... right?
They wanted to buy a home. And the Baumgartners, the family, and I sold them a home that day, 833 South Loomis.
Wow. And so if you can kind of just, I know the story, but for anyone listening, so you join there, you make this big leap. And you've always been pretty humble, but I know the stories. Quickly, you rose to be one of the top, if not the top, salesperson in that office.
No, in the entire company. Got it. I was number one.
Got it. That took a couple years?
Yeah.
And you became number one.
Yeah.
And so you're then, I know you started John Green Realtor in 1976. So you start Ridgeport in 1969. After a couple years, you're the number one salesperson. Things are going really well. You're there for six and a half years. And then I know, kind of like in the same way you jumped out of a perfectly good airplane leaving Illinois Bell, things were going so well that you decided to take another really big risk and start your own company.
Right, and here's what happened. Ridgeport Realtor, they got old.
Okay.
Their motivation, their leadership, their standards changed. And that bothered me because I used to teach the new agents maybe once a month. Mm-hmm. And I'd go into the Grange at the main office and teach. And I would be saying, here's how we do this, and this is what we do. And people would be saying, oh, no, we don't, John, we don't do that anymore. We just do it this way, which was a complete,
wrong way,
complete, totally different philosophy. And you've heard me say this all the time, but for me, I love business. You know, I don't read the sports pages often enough, but I read the business pages. And for me, business, it's a sport. And we're all teammates. And when these teammates are starting to say things like that, they're not the winning team that we had put together. Mm-hmm. And it embarrasses me, and it offends me, because I'll meet someone and they say, oh yeah, I met one of your new agents, you know, and they said they don't do this and they don't do that. And, you know, it doesn't reflect well.
Yeah.
And that was the motivation, you know, because I didn't have motivation. I was making, you know, a good income and had freedom. And
as I remember the story, dramatically dropped their standards. And they also, you were doing some training, but they stopped training everybody the way they were before, which stopped producing the same caliber of salespeople. And you saw kind of what was a World Series team start to crumble.
Totally, okay. Totally. And as a matter of fact, in 12 years later, they were out of business.
Okay.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
But. So
you're thinking this, you're thinking maybe you'll start your own thing. I imagine it's somewhat of a Jerry Maguire type setting when you decide to leave. And I've heard the story enough times, but I remember you saying, you know, when you decided you're going to leave, you were sure that a lot of people would go with, you were told a lot of people would go with you. And in fact, when you left, nobody went with you. So here you are again, I think, you know, talking to mom and saying, you know, we're going to do this. And things were going really well. And now, oops. And I remember as a kid, you know, you telling us, how hard it was in the very beginning, and that at night sometimes you would just sit there and cry because you couldn't believe that you'd been so foolish to mess up such a good thing you had going. And that really stuck with me as a kid, you know, because when you think dads don't talk about crying a lot to their sons, and when you would tell that story at a very young age, it painted a pretty clear picture how tough business can be. Ultimately, you fought through it, so the story ends well. But there were certainly trials and tribulations.
It's almost like a political issue, because the people started making up stories about me, mm-hmm. and things like, "Oh yeah, he was a good salesman, but he's never going to be a good leader or whatever," you know, yeah. and. There were some roadblocks that were thrown up. Mm-hmm. But it's like you said, you just fight a little harder. And it was one of the fortunate things were right in that first month, I put three homes on the market and they were all on a busy street.
So everybody thought you had.
Everyone said, oh yeah, I saw your signs. You know, this is still a small town.
Right.
And so that worked out really well.
Well, and I have to mention one story because I think it's always makes me laugh. In during the downturn, 2009-10, around then, we did some rebranding, and we had over 1,000 revisions to our what was our previous logo. And the marketing company was saying to me, you know, how sensitive will your dad be about, you know, changes to this logo? It's been a hallmark of the company for so long, and I can imagine there's a lot of, you know, passion and creativity and pride of authorship that went into it. And so I went and checked, and I said, hey, you know, we're really drilling down in this, and it looks like we're going to make some changes to the logo. How do you feel about us altering it? And he said, oh, that's fine, I don't care. And I was shocked to hear that he didn't care that much. I said, it doesn't like hurt you that we might be changing around? He goes, no, a buddy of mine and I, we drew it on the back of a case of beer one night, on the back of a case of beer on the cardboard, and that was the logo they chose to use. And I just think it's funny sometimes when you drive around, you see certain businesses and you kind of wonder how they started. There's some that are particularly bad, and they probably had too many beers when they drew the logo. But this was one that we'd used for a long time that had been something that was extremely well known in the community. But I love that about the logo story. I cracked up. I thought for sure you had done something, you know.
No, and then really there were two things. So number one, we wanted it to be one color because it's cheap. Oh, yes, you know, don't get tricky.
Yeah.
And then we actually chose the colors. We were coming back from a farm near Galena, and we saw the road signs on I-88. And we thought the government must have done a lot of studies about, you know, you can see it in all weather and all climates and all seasons. And that's why we picked it. No more intelligence than that.
But, all right. So you go and you start this new business. And what month is it in 1976? It's December? Was it?
So it's January 1976. And 3 weeks later, Clara Tirana, who had said she was going to join me.
But that was key because she was a great operator, administrator, and you weren't. Right. You were more of a big picture salesperson with some energy, passion, and vision. But you didn't like to sit at a desk all day.
I'm the world's worst administrator. Let's just say that.
Yes. And so,
as you know.
But that was, I think, an important component of the story because I think you were able to come in with your ideas and your creativity and your drive, but then it was all backed by someone who made sure the lights turned on every morning and there was paper in the office and pens and things people might need. And Clara went on to be with you from 1976 till
2003. Yeah. She retired.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, she wanted to retire for like 5 years before she actually did.
Yeah. Right. And I miss her today. Yeah. Had lunch with her a couple of months ago.
When you started the company and now it's January 1976, and Clara joins you, and then I think one by one you start adding agents that you may have known from Richport or other places that start joining along the way. And as I remember, the story was always just, you know, as you saw Richport really dropping their standards and stopping the training they were doing, that you wanted to create a real estate brokerage with full-time professional salespeople that would, frankly, make you proud to put your name on the sign, have them work at that company, and for you to know that you could go to lunch or dinner in your town and never have to worry about walking across the street and somebody stopping you and saying, hey, I work with, you know, Joe so-and-so at your company. He was terrible.
Exactly.
And I just remember that was kind of one of the core. Right.
We never set goals for, you know, hiring a certain number of people. We would, if we've found someone that we thought would be a really good fit and they thought they'd be a good fit, then we'd hire them. But we never had an ambition of being the largest, but we definitely had to be the best.
Yeah.
You know, and we would say, talk to the attorneys in town, talk to the mortgage brokers in town who do this day in, day out, and check us out. You know, that was always extremely important. So people were, you know, so people joined us. And I guess, Tim, the people that knew me at Richport knew the sales volume I had, but I mean, just the way things happen, I would often have too many customers. I couldn't handle them, so I would refer and give out and ask for help from all the other agents. So they knew that I would generate a lot of business, and at the same time, in those first few months, there was word on the street that Amoco was coming to I-88 and they're going to build a research campus. People going, wow, that's going to be great. I went, where are they coming from? And they said, Whiting, Indiana. So I got in my car and drove to Whiting, Indiana.
You know, you guys keep talking.
And
I got to run.
You know, there's gates. You can't get in. All this stuff. You can get in. And it turned out that the two guys that were in charge of human resources and so became great friends of mine.
And that's right.
You Bob Argenbright, Carl Werner.
I think this, I am vaguely remembering the story, but you couldn't get in. There were security gates and you had to get your way. We'll leave out some of the details, but you had to find your way into the Amoco
complex.
Offices,
yeah.
Complex.
To the point that I could put on a white robe and walk the hallways and go in, and there's the scientists mixing things and the polymers and all this, and it was great fun. You know, people say, well, how did you get in? I go, well, and what do you need to know? And then I would bring all kinds of information about the schools and the parks and the city and the buses and the trains, and that might have actually happened just before I started John Green Realtor, but the idea that I'm just trying to paint the market, you know, people might hear of it, but no one took the action, and that's why we're doing such a great job now, because there's energy and there's action and it's quick and it's meaningful, which it's just very rewarding. Very rewarding. Yeah.
Well, I think it does a pretty good job of covering kind of you growing up, how you grew up, what shaped some of the, you know, your views of the world. And I've heard a lot of these stories, obviously, growing up, but it's neat to kind of hear them all in one setting. And we hope everyone enjoyed. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great day.